Blog Talk Radio.
Life seems to crush your dreams, so find your balance for all you need. A little work, some family fun. Find your love, keep your life on the run. Told you how the story goes, so write your own script before you grow old. Live your life, laugh out loud. Own who you are, stand up proud. You
Good evening and welcome to the Star Chamber Show live podcast, and this is episode number 302, and this is Stephen Zimmer coming to you live out of Lexington, Kentucky, right before a big ice storm and snowstorm hits. So yes, we're going to get the show in before it all the deluge begins, and it's going to be a great one. And joining me tonight, I've got two co-hosts. One has not checked in yet. Hopefully it's not a weather related thing, because I know they're getting hit too with stuff down in Tennessee. But Holly Phillippe is with me, and yes, checking in at the last minute, and I guess he still has a connection, Daniel Dark. So good. We're all together. We're all ready to roll.
The dark one.
Guten Tag.
There he is.
So how's your weather?
Excellent.
Oh, my weather is lovely.
I bet.
Oh, it's about to get lovely here too.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
we're
getting the show
morning,
in just in
get
time.
Real lovely.
Yeah, we might have enough ice to knock out the power in another day or two. So good thing we're doing the show tonight.
Are you getting ice or snow, Daniel?
They're saying that it's going to stay as rain right now, but the temperatures are going down to low enough to where,
freezing rain.
That's what I'm thinking. It's going to have freezing rain here.
Yep.
All kinds of adventures.
It's only from, the freezing rain is only, or anything is only scheduled in between 6 o'clock in the morning and midnight tomorrow night, so we're not going to get
very
much.
We're under a freeze or a ice storm warning, and
they're saying
starting around 11 a.m. tomorrow, all the way until early Friday morning, it's going to be ice, and then it'll turn over briefly into accumulating snow. But they're worried we're going to get up to an inch of ice, and I mean, half an inch of ice is catastrophic. So they told us all to prepare for power outages and all this good stuff. So
the fun stuff.
So tomorrow's going to be fun for me. I'm going to have to make sure the laundry's done up and everybody needs to get their showers in and all that good stuff. And we're going to have to hunker down.
I did today. I will probably go out tomorrow morning if I don't do it tonight after the show. And fill up all my gas tanks and everything so I can run the generators if I need to.
There you go.
Well, I got some extra cat food today. I got some extra cat food in today, and making sure that at least the kitties are covered. So it's going to be an adventure, though. And Carol,
with the power going out, is all the things in your freezer and refrigerator falling out, so.
Right.
Well, heck, just throw them outside. As I said, I got coolers.
Right.
And, if I have to, I will put everything in cooler and just, sit it out here on either the deck or the front porch, one or the other,
Right.
But, it'll
be
an adventure. It's going
to get wild. Because, up on the deck, at least you're keeping neighborhood dogs and stuff like that from pillaging.
Right.
Well, we don't have nobody, but we do have raccoons and possums, and they do come up on
raccoons
the deck. I still have to bring it in at night. Yeah. Yeah.
Uh-huh. But we'll weather it as best we can. And Carol Preflatish and Sandy Linder are in the chat room getting that underway. It is open, folks, so come on in. And want to give a shout-out real quick. I know we got a new listener tonight, Nancy Jose Cecil. I know she's tuning in tonight. She had seen our she's an old friend of mine, and she had seen one of the promo graphics and happens to know tonight's guest. So it was one of those synergy moments. And so, yeah, she discovered the show that way, and I know she's listening tonight and want to say hi to her. Miss her. And definitely hope she's doing well, and definitely hope she enjoys the show tonight. And but yeah, the chat room is open. Carol Preflatish is in here, and Sandy Linder, and I know Carol's in our region, so she's about to get smacked with the fun snow ice storm. But it sounds like she's got plenty of supplies yesterday. Yeah, don't worry, Carol. I did get a bigger bottle of one of the bigger bottles of bourbon, so I am also supplied. Don't want you to worry. But Sandy Linder. Sandy's a little farther south.
Daniel?
Did you get a few boxes of wine to go along with that bourbon?
Oh, I've got drinks. I didn't get I need wine. I should have got more wine, but I've got some spiked tea. I found this tea that was aged in bourbon barrels, and let me grab one here because I brought some with me. I'm drinking my margaritas right now, but it's Kentucky Bourbon Barrel Hard Tea, and there's like raspberry flavored, lemon, and peach, and they're actually pretty good. So I still got those in the fridge, and I told Steve we get iced in too bad. I got vodka, so I can start throwing vodka in anything. I can put it in my tea, and I'm good.
Tea, watermelon.
keeping us warm,
right? Yeah, make the watermelon. Yeah, good old punched up watermelon.
If you need some good snacks and everything, take some of Stephen's bourbon and everything and put you a box of raisins in a thing and pour bourbon over the top of it and let that
soak
in good.
Yeah.
Heck yeah.
Yep, makes good.
Yeah,
we're definitely going to need it.
Yeah, it makes
keep
a good
warm.
Snack.
No,
That's true. I could pour out the pickle juice and fill it up with vodka.
Yeah, that's what Sandy's recommending.
Pickle.
She says everything's more exciting with a touch of vodka.
Yeah.
From the chat room.
That's
Sandy
true. I mean,
that.
You literally add it to anything. Doesn't matter. Add it to your bourbon.
Yeah.
You know, what the heck.
Yeah, looks like Carol's going to investigate your hard tea, Holly. So.
Oh, it's really good. Carol, I'll take a picture of it when I'm done with the show here and send it to you. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, that's what it's called, Kentucky Bourbon Barrel Hard Tea. And then they've got all these different flavors, and we got a pack. The other night I got one that the multi-pack. So this one's got the peach, raspberry. I didn't like the plain tea. Steven drank it, but me or Nora, either one cared for the plain tea one. But I do like the lemon and the peach and the raspberry. I haven't tried yet, but I brought one with me, so I will let you know.
Good stuff. Yes, that's what we do for you. We review good stuff to drink while listening to
the
show. So.
But I gotta finish my Cayman Jack margarita first. I'm working on it.
Right. Right.
Everything's a little bit more exciting with vodka. I know Holly is, but is everything else more exciting?
Oh, I'm even better with tequila. You know.
Yeah. That's dangerous, but
but she's on margaritas right now, so
we know
what goes in.
Yeah, I'm on margaritas, so there you go.
So Steve's going to have a warm night.
Yep, I sure will. But
he's got his bottle of bourbon. He'll be fine.
Yeah. Yeah, but getting us back to a couple of news updates, we've had some exciting stuff happen the past few days and on the Imaginarium front. And those of you that enjoy The Walking Dead are going to be happy to know that we have a new Imaginator guest who played Julio in season 4, Santiago Cirillo, and he is aboard. He is also an author and screenwriter. A lot of you may not know that, but he was in a lot of stuff. I mean, if you watch the series Nashville, he was Detective Martinez. He was Feebles in Beast of the Water. In the big documentary Princess Diana, Tragedy or Treason, he played Dodi Fayed. I mean, his list of acting credits is like 10 miles long. And the interesting thing about him that is cool is that he had a career at Gibson Guitars as a guitar builder, and he was responsible and the only builder for Chet Atkins. And he also built guitars for A-list artists, including Lenny Kravitz, Keith Urban, Kid Rock, Toby Keith. He built guitars for all those folks. And really cool guy. Really cool guy. And Holly,
he's so
Holly
much fun.
Him.
I'm going to get him on the show. I'm going to talk to you about coming on the show soon. Because me and him have bannered for years on Facebook, and it's just never worked out for him to get to come. And the other night, you know, he's like, heck yeah. He could be there this year. So this is exciting. And you guys are going to love him. He's very personable. He'll chat your ear off. He's hilarious. He is a ball of fun. He'll fit right in. I told him he's going to have a blast, and he'll want to come every year after this.
But
you know how we are.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But, yeah, we announced him, and today, of course, we announced Tony Acree back as Toastmaster, the main man, our friend and colleague of Hydra Publications. Love, Tony. And so that was an announcement today, and that was, of course, a great one that I know everybody was happy about. And every day we're putting out something. I mean, it's that crazy right now. It's chugging. So keep your eye on that website for sure. And so now I think we probably should give some acknowledgement to the sponsors of the show tonight, and that would be Sandy Lender and the amazing Ren Garcia. And I'll give a bonus shout out to Sandy because she sent me an email, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which I personally am not a big fan of, because I could talk for like an hour as to why I don't like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They shouldn't call it the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They got so many artists in there that have absolutely nothing to do with rock and roll. But that being said, though, I did vote. I did swallow my pride and voted today because Sandy is on a mission to get Duran Duran elected. And Duran Duran is on the ballot. And so I went and I casted my vote. And Sandy, I sent you an email with a screenshot.
Oh, send me
proves
the link,
that I did
Steve.
Vote. I did.
Well,
I
send me the
Sandy
link.
A screenshot.
I'll vote.
I will. And but I found that Judas Priest is on there, and they deserve it. They deserve to be on within the first 5 years or so of that thing. So, I mean, Judas Priest is an icon in heavy metal and rock and roll. So, I mean, it's a shame that it's now that they're on the ballot, but they're on there. I voted for them. And then I think I cast my other ballots for Pat Benatar, the Eurythmics, and then the New York Dolls, who are foundational in glam rock. It led right into the 80s and even, down around there in the early days of Kiss and stuff like that. So, I mean, those are my choices. I did give, of course, I do like Duran Duran quite a bit. So, yes, Sandy, I came through for you. And so that being said, now we will play you a Sandy Lender spot that's perfect for Valentine's Day. So listen up, folks.
Do vampires celebrate the same holidays as us? Author Sandy Lender says, of course they do. And up next is Valentine's Day. Welcome back to the Rose Chateau, where a nefarious businessman is threatening our favorite vampire and his fairy love interest. Get your copy of Sandy's new release, My Fairy Valentine, in print or ebook formats. You'll be guaranteed a humorful blend of sweet paranormal romance sprinkled with a touch of horror in Sandy Lender's latest novel, My Fairy Valentine.
Outstanding book. I can speak on it for sure. It's highly recommended and a great Valentine read. So pick that up as you're voting for Duran Duran for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So that's what Sandy would say. And now we'll go over to Ren Garcia and ask
better music.
What's that? Somebody broke up there. But we will go
Daniel.
On to Ren Garcia and run Ren's spot, and then, of course, he asks us the important question at the end.
Hey, The League of Elder dares to be unusual. It's easy to be swept away in this bold and uninhibited landscape where fantastic heroes become old friends and sinister villains inhabit every dark corner. Dare to explore things best left alone. Each book is your lantern, lighting the path to a world never before seen. So what do you say? Are you weird enough for us?
Yes.
Oh, we're weird
yes.
enough, Mr. Garcia.
We are, Mr. Garcia. Daniel's normal enough for you.
I'm normal enough for y'all.
I love Daniel's response, yes. And that's a compliment, Ren. That's a big compliment when Daniel tells you he's normal enough for you. So, yeah, fantastic stuff. And it looks like, yes, right on time, we have our guest on deck. And so I'm excited because this is the first time tonight's guest has been on the Star Chamber show. And tonight's guest is an author who has a love of 80s action and horror films and writes about a gun-toting vampire heroine who solves problems the American way. She's been published in a lot of different anthologies, and her first novel, Law Unto Herself, The Stolen, was released in September of 2021 by publisher Private Dragon. And I am proud and excited and honored to bring onto the show for the very first time, Jennifer L. Barnes. Jennifer, I just turned your mic on. Welcome to the Star Chamber show.
Hi, thank you very much for having me. Can you all hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, very well.
Right?
Okay, good.
Yep. Yeah, we all haven't been knocked out by ice yet. Yeah, we haven't been knocked out by the ice storm yet.
Not yet. Yeah, right now it's just raining really hard here, but apparently around midnight it's going to start turning the ice around in Louisville.
Yeah, it's starting to get colder here, so I know it's not far behind here. But, yeah, because even like Holly's son, they've already told him at his job, he works at Tiffany's, the diamond company, and they're already calling a half day there. They're letting him go at like 11 a.m. So, yeah,
yeah,
they're expecting
some bad
stuff.
Yeah, because it bored me all day long. I was like, oh, my God, no one's going to wreck. No one's gonna, I was so scared. And then he come home, and, yeah, they're going to let them out a half hour early, and we're in Lexington. So
half day.
Yeah.
Yeah. And shout out to Tiffany's. They are paying all their workers for a full day if they do the half day. So
yeah,
that's
a half a day.
Cool.
I meant not a half hour.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, come in for a half an hour.
A whole half hour. You're coming in for a half an hour, buddy.
Yeah. But great,
you better
great
put
to have
them
you.
Diamonds in there quick.
Great to have you on the show, Jennifer. And, yeah, it turns out that it's a small world story. I saw on one of your posts that Nancy Jose Cecil is a mutual friend and is listening to the show tonight. I gave her a shout-out earlier. But it's so cool. Small world.
Right. Well, she I know her through my husband. So apparently she knew my husband Lee when he was little tiny guy. So yeah, that's how I know Nancy is through my husband. So hi,
that's
Nancy,
awesome.
If you're listening.
Yep. I know she is. And I miss her because her smile can always light up a room. And she was always like, I mean, she's just one of those people that just exudes positive energy. She's just so, so amazing. And I miss her terribly. I tell you, I haven't seen her in many years. So I was really thrilled to see that she's listening to the show tonight and definitely, and it's because of you. So, and you are an author and you have a new book and this is, we're not too far removed from the release of it. I mean, just a few months ago, your debut novel.
Yeah.
So, and you said the magic word too, in your bio, vampires. And so Holly immediately perked up at that. So I know Holly's going to talk to you about that for sure. But tell us about your new novel and what it's all about and all that good stuff.
Well, my book is called Law Unto Herself, The Stolen. It is the first and hopefully a long series. It's urban fantasy. It's about a vampire vigilante. Her name is Forrest. She is known as Law Unto Herself. She is sort of like a cross between Duncan MacLeod from the Highlander TV show and maybe a little bit of Buffy herself. She's not really angsty. She's not brooding about like, oh my gosh, I hate my existence. I did so much terrible stuff. No, she actually pretty much, you know, after she was turned, which was a super traumatic experience, but after she turned, she basically had the whole Spider-Man mentality of great power comes great responsibility, and she fights the forces of evil with her vampiric abilities. And that's why she's kind of feared, kind of reviled, because she's not like a normal vampire. She didn't, you know, it's not like, you know, power corrupts absolutely. That wasn't her. That wasn't her case. So she, she fights werewolves, other vampires. There's Fae involved. In fact, her closest friend is an ancient fairy noble who's, her morality isn't shades of gray. It's more like shades of blue and orange, which is a lot of fun to write because, you know, these immortals, they're not like normal people. They're, and in fact, if you live for that long, you kind of go a little bit crazy. So that is kind of interesting to delve into with these characters of mine. And there's also, because I'm, you know, I was born in the 80s, so I grew up watching, you know, a bunch of 80s horror and action movies. So there's like a lot of action. I don't want to say gun porn, but yeah, there's, I'm not like as descriptive as other authors, but I do know a little bit about what I'm talking about. And Forrest, she drives a 1968 Camaro. Like muscle cars
there
involved.
You go, Steve.
Muscle cars involved and everything. So it's like kind of a love letter of, you know, 80s action and horror movies, superheroes, everything that I grew up kind of watching and reading.
Well, you won me over with saying the 80s and Camaro. So and Holly's already won over vampires. Those are some of our favorite things in the world. So, but Holly, I know you're going to want to discuss vampires and her vampires. So I'm just going to back off and let you handle that.
Well, the first thing I always have to ask is, do you go by the traditional lore? Or do you put your own little spin on it? And if so, could you tell us your little spin without giving us, you know, too much?
Of course. It's kind of like a bit like traditional lore as well as my own spin on it. I don't know. Have you ever seen the movie Fright Night, the 80s vampire horror movie?
Well, yeah. Yes, of course.
Which, like, probably spawned the whole vampire obsession that I have. And the reason why it did, because Jerry Dandruff, the vampire in it, was so different than any other vampire I'd seen as a kid. Probably mm-hmm. shouldn't have been watching the movie as young as I did, but, you know, my parents were super young, and they just closed my eyes, put a hand over my face during the nudity part. But I remember how contemporary Jerry was. He ate fruit. And then there was the whole, you know, you have to have faith for it to work on me. And that's one of the things that is prevalent in my story. Like, it's not just like Christianity. If you have faith in whatever religion you practice, you can repel a vampire with it. But an atheist with a cross is not going to do any good.
Right.
They don't have reflections. They can't go out in the daylight. Sunlight burns. They have to drink living blood. They're immortal. They have, you know, telepathy, mind control powers. They can't shapeshift. They're super strong, and they regenerate very quickly as well.
Cool.
So they are
pretty much immortal for like your character has been around quite a long time.
Yes, she has.
Yes.
In fact, she was turned in her late teens. So imagine mm-hmm. being a teenager for like 1,000 years and how that's going to play with somebody's psyche.
Right. Because
like,
people are not going to take you as serious, obviously, because you're young.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And you'd have to move frequently.
Right.
You know. Mm-hmm. People don't think about these things, but, you know, if you're not aging And being, you know, turned very young, yeah, if you're not aging, you're gonna have to keep moving because people are going to start questioning, why aren't you aging?
Why aren't you
That's
aging?
That's a red
exactly.
flag. Mm-hmm.
That's
and,
awesome.
You know, and other supernaturals don't take her seriously because she looks like, you know, a late teenager. In fact,
right.
In the first book, the antagonists call her Pom Pom because she looks like she should be on the cheerleading squad.
Oh. And here she's older than than all of them. So
yeah, exactly.
That would be extremely frustrating. That was like, oh God, there goes my mind again, my poor fibro brain. Oh, Stephen, you ain't gonna believe I've totally blanked out on her name. The little girl in the vampire. What was her name?
Claudia.
Yeah, Claudia. God, why did that skip my name? I don't know. My brain's fried.
It's okay.
Anyway,
you've
Claudia,
been editing all day, Holly. Holly's been editing all day, so
I have. Literally,
excuse.
I'm still
She's
seeing
fried.
Words. My brain is gone. I can't think of anything. But Claudia, you know, it was tragic because she could never fall in love. She couldn't have a relationship. She did love Louis, but, you know, she could never have any type of intimate relationship because she was forever a child, you know, and that's why it's frowned upon to turn children, you know, because
exactly.
they're stuck. Mm-hmm.
They're stuck.
That's
and
it.
There's that, and there's that dichotomy of being, you know, an ancient immortal, but they still kind of have that childish mindset as well because their brains didn't
right.
fully develop.
That's true. Very true. Because they say your brain keeps actually, like, growing until you're in your 20s. And then, of course, we learn something new every day. So with age comes wisdom, you know. And
exactly.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's a lot to it. Other than, you know, I hate these portrayals of vampires where, and Steven knows this, I hate it when they just make up these demonic animalistic creatures that just want to kill. And it's like, oh, no, that's a cop-out. Come on. You know, there's so much more you can do with a vampire character in books and movies. I mean, there is so much depth there that you could character build and, you know, different things. I mean, you could go 1,000 different ways, you know, and take the storyline.
And also, I think a smart villain is scarier than the animalistic one. I mean, because the animalistic one, it's not going to be able to reason, or in the case, you know, if you know, you got a sadistic, intelligent villain who is going to
right.
prey upon your, you know, your weaknesses and know how to dig at those spots.
Well,
right. And exploit
them. A werewolf and a vampire. You know, both of them will kill you if they need to, but the werewolves
right.
don't kill you just because.
Right. Yeah, because it is more of an animalistic behavior, especially, you know, they're in wolf form. You know, that's more plausible. But, yeah, and vampires do get bloodlust, and, you know, especially young ones, they, you know, typically with the lore, you know, they do have trouble controlling. But they learn to pull that back because they still have that little tiny bit of humanity, you know, and the brain structure to reason. So they can learn to control.
Well,
it.
Sometimes
and
balance of both, though. One of my favorite vampire series is Brian Lumley with his Necroscope series, and in that they actually are aliens in a way. They come from another planet, and they when they're in like a human form, they, you know, they look pretty, you know, but they can turn into, you know, but when they, you know, they can turn into very bestial, feral kind of mode too. So
mm-hmm.
it's almost like they're like
mm-hmm.
like a balance between those two, like the totally you know, feral and then the, you know, more controlled. But it's it's really a great series of books.
Right. Where your hero vampire is you know, very intelligent. I mean, she's still young, but, you know, and brain-wise, but she's very intelligent. I mean, she has thought, and she obviously can control herself, correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's to the point where she actually kind of starves herself, because not because she feels mm-hmm. guilty, but because, you know, she doesn't want to hurt, like, normal people. But, like, she'll let go. She'll let go against an opponent. And, right. But against, like, normal people, she keeps herself pretty controlled.
Right. She just
sometimes
doesn't go out
at a hindrance
kill
to herself.
Random people for no reason.
Yeah, and exactly. And another thing is, it also, like, would attract, like, the police and vampire
mm-hmm.
hunters, and make people question, which would break the so-called masquerade, which, you know, no supernatural really wants.
Right, right. That's good thinking. So you've got much more planned for her than you're saying you want this to be multi-books in this series. So you've
right.
got, like, other side characters that you have an idea, maybe you want to do a spinoff?
Actually, yes, I do. She has her best friend had a son that she couldn't raise because of a magical nullifying ability, which hurts fairies. So I'd actually like to do a spinoff with him and a couple other characters that basically they're a group that solve supernatural crimes and keep the supernatural secret from the rest of the world, because if it got found out, best case scenario would kind of be the whole X-Men thing with the mutants, where people, you know, they freak out knowing that they're not,
right.
humans aren't the top of the food chain. So they would, but humans have greater numbers. So it's one of those games where the, you know, the people would probably send groups and stuff to wipe out the supernatural because they're a threat.
Right. Right.
So the whole thing would be trying to protect that secret from the public at large, and the consequences of that, of what some of the things they would have to do.
We've talked about that before on here. Don't just toss away to the side your side characters, because your backup characters sometimes take a life of their own, and, you know, you can write a whole series just based around them.
Exactly.
Very easy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that's actually kind of how Launch herself came about. Originally, she was a side character. And
oh, wow.
then she just kind of took a life of her own. And,
mm-hmm.
and then she, you know, kind of grew more and more in my head. And then my readers seemed to react more to her than most of the other stuff I was writing. So she just kind of took over.
She's like, you're going to write about me.
Exactly.
I'm not
exactly.
going to hush. You're going to do it. Yeah. That's great. So your, like, early influences is like the 80s, like
mm-hmm.
horror
yes.
and movies and all that. Who were your early influences in, like, paranormal, urban fantasy writing? Who are, like, some of your favorite authors?
TV show. Probably my biggest influence would probably be Buffy the Vampire Slayer and its spinoff Angel, but Joss Whedon isn't someone that is looked favorably upon if you've been following the news about him. It's kind of sad, really, because I used to put him in high regard, and to find out he's actually a horrible person was kind of like a gut punch. But
oh, I know.
Buffy and Angel weren't just, you know, Whedon. There were the actors and other writers such as Drew Goddard, Jane Epson, Marty Knoxon, that breathed life into these shows and characters, which super inspired me. Another thing would be Highlander, the series. Book-wise,
yeah.
there was an author named L.J. Smith. You may know her. She wrote The Vampire Diaries, Well, she also wrote this series that never ended. I've been waiting for this book for like 20 years called My World. And yeah, the final book never came out. And she's apparently been still working on it or whatever, but it's been 20 years. And I'm like, I started reading this series as a teenager, and I want to know what happened. I want to know.
Right.
And it's never came out. But she's had some health problems and stuff. But yeah, L.J. Smith with the Vampire Diaries and Night World was a big influence. Christopher Golden's Dark series I really enjoyed. The early Anita Blake books were awesome until they reached a certain point where I wasn't as much of a fan of the series as that's when they got super popular, when the series took a turn towards the more romantic and erotic aspects. But
right.
those first 10 books, though, they are solid with, you know, Anita solving cases and with the necromancy and everything before it became about her relationships. So that was another big influence. Also, oddly enough, a lot of martial arts movies. My dad actually was a practicing martial artist when I was growing up, so even though I never got to take classes or anything, but I got to, you know, see him practice, and of course, because he was into martial arts, he liked to watch a lot of martial arts movies, so I grew up watching those as well, and that is also, you know, part of it. Like, I like writing hand-to-hand combat scenes. So that also
that all tied in.
Is kind of, yeah, all tied in. And funnily enough, superhero stuff, even though I would probably say mine's more of a pulp fiction standpoint than, like, you know, spandex costumes, but that definitely, like, I grew up watching the X-Men cartoon, Batman, Spider-Man, all that, you know.
Heck yeah.
That mishmash of superheroes and 80s horror movies and kung fu movies and Buffy
we
the Vampire
like the same
and Highlander.
Man.
That's my
world too. I know that world very well.
Late night black and white Bruce Lee movies, the best.
Yes.
Oh yes.
Oh.
Oh yeah.
And I love, like, excuse me, I don't know where that come from. But I like the Frankenstein, the old black and white, and I used to cry when I was a kid because I felt so bad for him. I loved him. And then I always told my mother because, oh gosh, since I very first ever seen a vampire, I'm like, oh, that's me. And it relates to myself. My little black heart was so happy. And I always told my mom, I'm going to grow up and marry a vampire, Mom. And so she would let me watch all these horrible vampire movies. It didn't matter how bloody or what they were when I was a kid, because I loved them. And it didn't scare me. I'm weird like that. I have a granddaughter. It's named Raven. And she's the same way. We call her Little Creepy. And like, nothing creeps her out. She is hilarious. Nothing creeps her out. But I was like that. You know, I love vampires.
Let me stop
from
you there.
Day one.
Well, Jennifer will like this. Yes, Raven once made a 6'5", 500-pound man shriek and jump over a bench. I'm not kidding you.
My son, Martin. We were watching a really scary movie, and she was only about, what was she then, 4 or 5 maybe? And that's when he named her Little Creepy. Because we have a living room downstairs, and short story, but we were watching this really scary movie. Lights were off, you know, and we thought she was upstairs asleep because she was staying with us at the time.
Supposed to be in bed.
All of a sudden, a jump scare part, he turns around, and she is sitting on the stair behind him and
staring at him.
And so he's eye to eye with her. He jumped up and screamed like a little girl, jumps over the coffee table thing down there. And I thought we would die. And she just laughed. She thought that was hysterical.
Yeah, and we're talking, and it's no easy feat. He's 6'5", 500 pounds. I'm not exaggerating. I mean, we're talking a very big guy. And, yeah, he literally leaped over the thing. It was so
funny story.
Priceless, yeah.
But, I started watching scary stuff, you know, very young, too. So, yeah, I can understand that. But, yeah, you like a lot of the action part of the fighting and the choreography with the vampire, you know, fights and all that. Did you watch the originals?
The TV show, I watched the first couple seasons, and not because I got bored with it. I just, my day job, unfortunately, was requiring me to work a lot of overtime. So it was one of those things where it's like, well, I could watch TV or I could write. Well, I'm going to choose to write over watching TV. But no, I really like the character Elijah in the show. He was just, you know, like, he's elegant, but he's, you know, he's also could be menacing, and he was, and he's a badass too.
Even more so than
his brother. And I like the actor playing him a lot too. So yeah, no,
oh, I do too.
Klaus was, you know, a very cool villain, and he should have ended up with Caroline,
Klaus.
But that's not here or there.
I agree. But you would love it. You need to finish the whole thing. They have some epic battle scenes in there that you would really, really like and draw off of. You really would. I think you'd get inspired. I really do. Yeah, give it another whirl. It's very sad ending. Don't look it up. Don't get spoilers. But, yeah, I cry. I've never cried so hard in my life as the end of that show. I tell you, that killed me. But I'd hate it to see it end. That was a lot of it, you know.
Right.
You get attached to them. But, yeah. So that's cool. We had some earlier influences in common. Daniel? I know you watched all kinds of stuff. Daniel's Mr. Jack the Ripper himself, so he loves the horror industry.
Well, you know, I was on the original, you know, set with Nosferatu, you know.
Well, that's true. He's only 200 years old, so, you know.
Yeah, Daniel got his first vampire book from Bram Stoker in person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There you go. Daniel,
hey,
you got questions for, honey?
I thought that he might be able to, you know, to use a book sale, you know. he was young. He was trying to be a, you know, author and everything. I gave him a few pennies. And he gave me a book, you know.
Gave the man a shot, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. That's so funny.
You never know when, you know, one of these authors and everything might just need a little bit of boost in their, you know, sales and
That's
stuff
true.
Like that. So that they can, you know,
we all do, yeah.
They can
keep
amen to that.
Yeah.
Yes. Well,
apparently
you
use
a hack or something like that and not know how to write a story, but, you know, give them a chance, you know.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. that
so,
even works for today. Yeah.
Yep.
No, I'm sitting here listening and everything, and you have described most of your vampire's characteristics, except for, you know, how do they prefer to take in blood?
Oh,
well, that depends on the vampire themselves, but a lot of them do the seduction because that's probably the easiest way. That's one thing. Becoming a vampire in my verse, you kind of become like the best version of yourself physically. So almost all supernaturals are attractive in some shape or form. So vampires are attractive. So, and they even have like a little built-in lure ability. Not as much as, say, like an incubus or a succubus, but they can, you know, with their telepathy and other abilities, they can influence people to seduce them and then take their blood. Now, sometimes you get one who likes to act like a serial killer and just, you know, kill and then disguise their kills just because they think it's amusing to them. Forrest actually feeds a lot during battle. She uses it to her advantage. She has a bite with a unique ability that can be very distracting once she gets her fangs into you, or the bad guy, rather. And, in fact, her fairy friend is not addicted to her bite, but enjoys it quite a lot, so let's just take it there. So she gets, you know, willing people that want her to bite them because it's enjoyable for them. It's not enjoyable for her other than she gets fed. And then she does it in combat as, like, you know, kind of like a secret move, super distraction, gives herself the upper hand. And if she's taking a lot of damage during the fight, it also helps, you know, kick in the regenerative abilities. But
she prefers to bite over using a lance or anything like that to extract blood from.
Probably because they have fangs, so that's pretty convenient. And also, they can seal the bite, so to speak, after they're done, so it doesn't really leave like any like really distinguishing marks, except maybe like a bruise, like a hickey. So they can close it when they're done.
Oh, cool.
Okay.
See, I like that. I like the fact that they don't have to kill. They can get them a drink.
Right.
You know, get a little
right.
drink, and you don't have to kill. And that's the kind of vampire I prefer to be. Thank you. You know. There's a few people. I don't know. It'd be questionable. I don't know. I'd have a hard time controlling myself. But
is she able to turn
others?
Go ahead, huh?
Yeah. Basically, any vampire can turn someone else into a vampire. It's done through an exchange of blood. Basically, they suck your blood, and then the victim will suck some of their blood, and that's how they would get turned. But a lot of vampires are very picky about who they turn because, you know, that's actually a big responsibility. There's also something called the fire bond that forms. That came out before – I had that idea before the Vampire Diaries did it in the show, where fire can actually – kind of, you know, telepathically have a connection with their fledgling and make make sure they don't go completely off the grid and go nuts with bloodlust. To help keep that, you know, if you a bunch of dead bodies start piling up somewhere, people are going to ask questions.
Right.
They start looking, which becomes dangerous. So,
correct.
Yeah, it's a responsibility. There's another character in the book. He is, I don't want to say love interest, but he's kind of like her ride or die in a way. Like he's got intense feelings for her. She doesn't know how she feels about him. But he has actually turned many people over the years, and there's a complex relationship because he actually had to turn his older brother who didn't want to become a vampire. And he's always had sort of that on his conscience as well. But he didn't want to move his brother, so he had to turn. Even though
cool.
his brother was a Templar and didn't want to get turned and isn't happy with being a vampire.
Can yours too, like if the sire would get killed, does that kill all the fledglings? because some authors, it's done both ways. Some, you know, if like the main sire of the line gets killed or dies, then the whole line dies with them.
Yeah, that's not a problem in my verse. Like, if the sire dies, okay. The other vampires, they don't die.
Okay.
Like,
yeah.
Once you become a vampire, you become a vampire.
That's it.
Unless you get killed.
On your own, right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Or, exactly.
You were talking
about... Yeah, I hate
about
that
redemption.
When they do that. I'm like, no, that's not fair, you know, especially if you haven't seen your maker in hundreds and hundreds of years, you know. I'm like, that's kind of crappy, you know.
That's true.
It is. It's crappy. It's like, well, if they're being stupid and got themselves killed, that's on them, man. You know, if I'm being careful, leave me alone. It's...
Right. Well, also, I think that mythology, like, actually takes away from other, you know, other characters' autonomy. They lose their, you know, like, oh, they kill the sire, and then they all die, or they become a human again. So they lose themselves, and it makes them just kind of like they're an attaché to this other character that you don't really see, and then they lose like their meaning, which I don't like that.
Right. Well, that's cool. So yours aren't in danger of that.
No.
in the same line of that question, you're talking about regenerative process and what the vampires can do on regenerating themselves. What does it take to kill one of your vampires?
Well, like the traditional lore, beheading, wooden stake to the heart, prolonged exposure to sunlight, fire, and silver works on younger ones. Older vampires, they don't have the... they don't have, you know, silver isn't going to kill them, but you can actually bind one with silver so they can't escape. But a silver bullet isn't going to kill an older vampire, but it could kill a younger vampire if it's to the heart or the head. And that's why my character carries a gun. even though it's a .44 auto mag and it's one of, you know, the most powerful guns in the world, and it can it's powerful enough if it's close enough range, and it can actually take somebody's head off. So you got decapitation in a messy fashion with that as well.
Yep, it will do that.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
That'll work.
So
yeah,
what?
I know when Steve told me that it was urban fantasy, but then it was vampires, and I'm like, huh, I'm going to have to check this out. I've never read an urban fantasy that, you know, that main characters were vampires. You know, usually it's considered like paranormal or romance or paranormal fantasy. So that whole thing intrigued me.
Right, it's like most urban fantasies, if you do get a, you know, vampire character, they're either a side character or they're the love interest. They're never like the main character. Or if they are, they're a dude. And that was another thing that, you know, always saw, like the female vampire falling in love, vampire hunter falling in love with the male vampire. There was never like a gender swap version of it. And I really can't think of off the top of my head that anyone's ever came out with something like that. So that was another idea of where this came from, where, you know, there's always, like, the heroic vampire was always been a guy.
Right.
And I was like, no, I want a good lady vampire. Why can't I have a good lady vampire? So I kind of created myself.
There you go. That's exactly it.
And that's how you take a popular creature like a vampire and you put your own stamp on it as a writer, is when you do things like you're doing.
Because,
I mean, that's a great
example.
Well,
when you're writing creatures as vampires, werewolves, Bigfoots, you know, things like that, you have to avoid those cliches.
Exactly.
And, you know, because, I mean, it's the same old, people are not going to want to read it. You know, you want to spin something fresh, you know, give it something new. So, yeah.
Give a Dracula a new tape.
Yeah. And I know people hated it because, you know, Twilight, they sparkled or whatever. I'm sorry. I loved the Twilight series. I do. But, you know, but my favorite vampire of all is always going to be Lestat. I'm still waiting, Lestat. Hello. For my, you know, my mortal kiss. But, yeah, you know, he doesn't sparkle, obviously, and it's a running joke.
But, you know,
if he got the chance, he
probably would, though. If you gave Lestat the choice,
definitely.
If he could sparkle, he would.
Definitely.
He'd take that up in an instant. And you know what?
Definitely.
Stephanie Meyer actually has some really cool ideas about her vampires, like the crystalline skin and you know, and the venom in their bite. If you know, other than like the kind of creepy, you know, the weird romance between Edward and Bella, like there's some like really good world building in there. And I'm kind of sad that she didn't you know expand upon that more.
I know. She could have really, she could have went so many different ways. And again, she could have split that whole series apart and went and did the whole werewolf. She could have went off and did a whole werewolf series just about them and their lore and their background and go more into their history and, you know, the characters that they talked about. Do Jacob's side. She wrote, you know, Edward's point of view. She could have done Jacob's point of view and told more what he was going through, you know, than what we read. Yeah, I mean there was so much there. That's why we always say don't forget your you know background characters, because you could really run amok. Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely.
Totally.
But no. Yeah, I mean, like there's some really fascinating lore in Twilight, and it just never, it's in the background, you have to look for it, but when you do find it,
it's there.
How she set up
mm-hmm.
how she set up her vampires, they're actually, you know, yes, they sparkle, but why they sparkle and how powerful they are, they're kind of terrifying.
Right, and all of those other characters, I mean, they could have easily had all their spinoffs, you know, every one of the Cullens.
I would be their opening day if she wrote a spinoff with Alice.
Oh, man, you and me both. I would love to see an Alice spinoff because her background was absolutely fascinating, you know, all the history with that. She could have really ran. That's why I said, don't, you know, you got to think about those side characters. It's like, wait a minute,
well,
I could do a whole series on these. You know?
Right?
Expand. Especially when you've got her clout. I mean, you know, she's already sold millions of books. So, you know, people that like the books, like me, I would. You know, if she'd put another one out about the Cullens or whatever, I would be right there. I'd buy one right away.
Well, I want to use one example just from Chris, my Christmas gift to you. I mean, when you're doing a franchise, I mean, you can work in one of those characters and make them star in their own novel, because that's what happened in Blood and Gold, the Anne Rice novel, which tells the story of Marius. And that is a perfect example of how you can take a character and, you know, put them on center stage and make a great novel, you know, and that's
well, she also did it with Pandora, which, you know, I use Pandora as my vampiric name. I love the character of Pandora, and I feel that she could have went a whole series actually just on Pandora because she was so old and had seen so much. She did one title devoted to her, but she could have rolled with it. She really could have. Gone too soon. Yes.
Right. Well, my husband's already demanded that there is one character that I need to do a spinoff book of. So I'm going to have to write that for him at some point.
In this vampire series?
Yeah. Yeah, there's one character she's at, that my husband's like, okay, you need to write a book about her. And I'm like, okay. And he's like, you need to call it Choosing Violence.
Nice.
Right.
Nice. Well, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, with your books, you have one out now, and you obviously are going to develop a long series. We've been talking about spinoffs and things like that. What kind of pace do you foresee as far as, like, new titles coming out in this series and possible spinoffs? What kind of pace do you seek to maintain for new books?
Right now, I do have a day job, obviously. Right now, I would love to get out a book a year, maybe a couple short story anthologies as well. But a book a year right now is my main goal. If I get to the point where I can write full time, then I would probably say more. But right now, I would have to say a book a year. That's pretty feasible.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And
you mentioned
your short fiction, and I saw that you had a number of short stories in different anthologies leading up to your first novel. What were the genres of those anthologies? Can you tell us a little bit about the short fiction that you had out before your first book?
It actually takes place in the same. Most of it takes place in the same world. With, like I said, originally she was supposed to be a side character, and then she just kind of took over. Well, the anthologies are other characters in that same world. She may be mentioned a couple times. The latest one that I had published was called Altered Beast, which actually one of the main characters is her latest student, a Damphere detective, and he ran into basically a fairy werewolf is the best way I can describe it. The Celtic lore on werewolves is awesome. They're not as, they're more like protectors of nature. And this like protector of nature ran down this evil fae that had gone to New York, and the detective was after it too. So they joined forces to fight this evil fae. And it was a lot of fun to write because I'll just call him Protector Nature right now instead of going into like fairy werewolves and normal werewolves. He is like this big geek, like gamer and everything. And that's where the title Altered Beast came from, was from the video game. Altered Beast.
Yeah, I was wondering.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, when he transforms, he says, power up, and then he transforms. So there's a lot of, like, little geeky references that in my story. I've actually wrote several stories about the Damphere detective, just because, like, even though he's not, I like the whole duology of he has one foot in two different worlds, but he doesn't really belong to either. And that outsiderness, I kind of sympathize with that a lot. So I like writing about him. And I've also had a couple with Forrest published as well. Just her normal night fighting crime or whatnot, or one of them was actually a weird western that took place you know, right after the Civil War, where she was out west investigating a group of werewolves who were terrorizing this little mining town.
Very cool. Very cool. So readers that like your novel a lot actually can look forward to exploring a lot more of this world if they, you know, go and get these anthologies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Is there a plan to eventually, and I know different publishers have different rights agreements and all, but is there a chance that at some point you might be able to pull all those short stories into like a, you know, a world collection, like a collection release? From that world down the line?
Well, most of them I've actually got my rights back for. So, yeah, that would definitely be something in the future. Exactly, yes.
Yeah, you mentioned Altered Beast. It just gave me flashbacks to my when I was in the dorm in my freshman year of college, and one of the guys in the dorm just used to play from morning to night on a Commodore Amiga Altered Beast. Brought back some good old school memories for me. Yeah, he played the daylights out of it. We used to watch him a little bit, but that was fun. Good memories, but yeah, just made me smile when you said Altered Beast. But that is so cool. But yeah, that's awesome that you get to do. Go ahead.
My husband's a huge gamer. In fact, his hobby is repairing old arcade units. So
nice.
You know, it's
cool.
Dying art of the arcade cabinets. And in fact, I got an old pinball machine right next to me right now. And then there's an arcade unit in the kitchen, and there's like another one upstairs. And there's an arcade in Cincinnati. There's actually a little chain called Arcade Legacy, and he's friends with the owner, and he'll just like go there for a weekend and fix his machines, and just because he enjoys it.
Well,
That's cool.
It's kind of like vinyl. The old school retro game world is actually growing, and I know this because I had a ColecoVision, and so I'm a member of some groups. I have a vintage ColecoVision. I have a lot of fun with that. Still do. It works great. But a lot of like the little tabletop handheld arcade games. You even got people that are 3D printing the cases for them, and then making the boards and putting the ROMs in them that play the games.
Yeah.
So they're actually making like new ones for people when they can't buy them, you know, easily online. And so, I mean, I don't know if they're, you know, building the full size ones yet, but it looks like there's a real hunger to kind of, you know, do those old school things. And so, yeah, I wouldn't say it's a dying. I'd actually say it's something that's in its growth phase now. I think that stuff's going to grow.
Mm-hmm.
Popular people like that stuff, the vintage.
Definitely.
I mean, because we're both kind of vinyl snobs. Like, I love heavy metal, and heavy metal just sounds so much better on vinyl than it does on CD.
It's so agree.
You get 10 bonus points just for that alone. Oh, my God, yes. I'm a metalhead and hard rocker through and through, and vinyl is – and Holly gets so irate with me because, you know, I can't stop getting more. So, yes.
It'd be okay
yes,
if it was organized, Zimmer.
Yeah, but getting back to the point, Jennifer, you're absolutely right. There's nothing that sounds better than vinyl. Just play stuff side by side.
Let me ask Jennifer, do you blare heavy metal when you're writing?
Yes, actually. I make specific, you know, playlists depending on what I'm working on. And yeah, I mean, Judas Priest, Dio, Iron Maiden,
and then
love it.
He does the same thing. I couldn't do that. I have to have, you know, I've got to have my, he calls it jellyfish room music. You know, I've got to have like my Viking music or an ambience where I'm like in Harry Potter's library or, you know, something like that. I got to have some kind of ambience.
No, there's a specific thing, Jennifer. It's called, I call it sea ray music. And it's when you go to the aquarium, whenever you go to the sea ray exhibit, they always play a certain kind of music. Sea rays evidently love this music. I don't know why, but it's really
so
tranquil.
Well, so does Ollie, because that's how I concentrate. I have to have my sea ray music, yeah. my fairy music, my fairy folk.
Another genre of music that I listen to a lot is synthwave. Carpenter Brut, Dance with the Dead, Street Cleaner, Midnight
nice.
Danger. They're all fantastic. Yeah, so it's like one of my playlists, because I also like 80s music too, obviously. So like,
oh God, well we got a band you have to listen to when you get off of here. You got to look them up, Steve. What is the name of that crazy band that Noah just turned us on to?
Oh, Germany?
That is just epic.
Yeah. They're called Eskimo Callboy, and they're a German band, and they're getting like millions of views on YouTube, and they're like a new hot thing. And they're going to be in Louisville in November playing live. But I'm telling you, they are so catchy.
It's like synth metal.
It's like synth metal. They fuse both of them.
It's got like this 80s vibe. It's 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah,
totally
80s. It's crazy.
Catchy,
but you love them.
Crazy, and I love them, and go figure, from the land that brought you Rammstein. You know, I was always something unusual coming out of Germany music wise.
Right?
So this is it.
Yeah, Eskimo Callboy.
Eskimo Callboy.
I mean, that's
crazy
where the name
but,
came from as well. So you know.
Yeah.
I mean, for the longest time, all the good metal was coming from overseas, the Finland, Norway, like Beast in Black.
Oh yes.
Nightwish.
Good symphonic metal and
Nightwish.
Yeah, of course, Norway famous for the black metal and the heavier end of the spectrum, you know, and death metal and things like that.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, all Europe. But yeah, well, Europe. I mean, my God, I mean, the British new wave of British heavy metal in the '80s that brought us Iron, you know, all those bands, you know, Saxon and Iron Maiden swept in a little bit during that same time period. Def Leppard and everybody. I mean, it was. Yeah, great stuff. Yeah, Europe is awesome.
Yeah.
I want to go to Wacken someday. There's the heavy metal festival Wacken in Germany. I'm dying to go to that someday.
Yeah, you two get all kinds of awesome. Writing done there, man.
But yeah, vote for Judas Priest. I hate the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for many reasons, but Judas Priest is on the ballot, so we got to get him in. It's years behind. Yeah, they deserve to be in during the first 5 years. Yeah, but yeah, they finally got them on the ballot. Oh, frustrating.
Mm-hmm. So they made it perfect. Judas Priest has like Screaming for Vengeance is one of those few rare perfect albums. You can listen to it from beginning to end and not skip any of the tracks, and it is good from start to finish. I mean, you got The Hellion, The Electric Eye, you've got Screaming for Vengeance itself, you got Another Thing Coming, Bloodstone. It's just a fantastic album.
I took it
we're
in
We're going to have
sixth,
to have Jennifer back
grade.
For a whole metal night. You two, we're going to have a whole metal night.
But she brought up the album, and I got that in sixth grade for my parents, and I took it into school, and my teacher in sixth grade art class let me play it while the class was working on their art. And so, yes, I actually,
that's
in a
awesome.
Catholic school, played Screaming for Vengeance, the album, on vinyl for our class. True
nice.
Story.
That's awesome.
Steven for the win.
That is awesome.
Yes.
You were learning
were
them.
Good.
Learning them.
Well,
I did.
No.
good stuff. Yeah, we could talk for 3 hours on metal. But, yeah, we definitely want to get back to your books. And talk to books here. But yeah, it sounds like we have a ridiculous amount of common ground, you know, here. But it's but I also want to mention now, you mentioned in your bio, it's in your bio, so I know it's something that you definitely, are very enthusiastic about, but you are a regular D&D player. We just got back into it after many – I just got back into it after many years. It's passed about 2 years, and I have loved returning to it. And now, as an author, I look at it with different eyes, and I see how D&D, when I played it as a in my youth, was very helpful to me in becoming an author. And I'm wondering, is the same dynamic true for you when you're playing D&D and gaming? Does that help you with your character development,
yeah.
and world building? And I'd like you to talk about the gaming, because we have mentioned that in the show before.
Okay, well, I play 5th edition. which is great because I'm sorry.
Oh, we do too. Edition. Yeah, I'm familiar.
Yeah, it's I love it because it I don't want to say dumbs it down, but it's not as complex as previous editions. Like AD&D, you had calculus to figure out how to attack an enemy.
Right.
And I will admit that playing D&D has actually helped my math skills, and I've got quite the dice collection. But yeah, it actually.
Nice.
It actually does help, like, I don't get writer's block as often when I play D&D.
Huh.
One thing I learned is I do not DM. I do not make a good DM as a writer because as a writer, you know, you have control over everything, but as a DM, you don't have control over your player characters. And they will do stuff that you would have never even conceived possible. And, you know... And you also get attached. Yeah, you have to adapt. And then you also get – then my problem is I get attached to my players' characters, and
right.
I pull my punches. And they know I pull my punches. I get mad, not mad. But as a player, yeah, I mean, because – the group that I'm with, most of us are sort of creative. One of the people, she's a graphic designer, and she'll actually draw our characters every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
My husband is actually our current DM, and he loves the crazy crap we come up and we throw at him. He loves coming up with stuff on the fly. Or if he does plan something, it's because he got inspired for something. Like when the remake of Resident Evil 2 was coming out, he was so hyped that he put that in the game. We fought one of the monsters from Resident Evil that he cobbled together. And that was a lot of fun because we have a couple people in the group that aren't, they're not big horror fans. So they were getting, super scared, and they were like, it's got no form! And freaking out at the table. It was great. But no, I love it as a storytelling form, cooperative storytelling. It also helps with, I've got pretty bad anxiety and depression, and it actually
mm-hmm.
helps with both of those. I can deal with feelings at the table that I normally would just bottle up in real life. And, it's great. It's like therapy, but with pretty dice.
And it keeps you from getting writer's block because it keeps you inspired.
Exactly. Yeah, because you have to come up with stuff on the fly sometimes, and
right.
You have to do a lot of improvising. So yeah,
right.
It helps keep the creative juices flowing, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's
and
definitely
fact,
a lot of fun.
Oh, it is. We actually had to retire characters of ours that we were playing with for years because
mm-hmm.
they reached level 20. So we actually got to have an epic
right.
level campaign, which a lot of players don't get to do. And that was a lot of fun. My character became a champion for a couple death gods. So she became a reaper. My husband's character, she actually became an actual god.
Nice.
So
my son was talking about once you get to level 20, I mean, you're basically a god at that point.
Right,
your character
exactly.
is so powerful that, you've got to do something. You're going to have to retire them somehow or let them go out with a bang,
right.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what we did, and it was great.
Yeah.
And now we're back playing level one characters, and
yeah.
our next session's this Sunday, and I'm terrified we're going to have a teleported kill because we have what I like to call heroic stupid, where they want to save the day, but we're just level one.
Right.
We don't have the music. Right.
Just make sure you got a cleric or a paladin around. Somebody can heal.
Right?
Yeah, it is so much fun. Daniel, you would love it. You would actually love D&D.
Oh, be great.
You get a kick out of it.
I used to play D&D when y'all were little kids.
All right, did you have to play the one that where you have to have, like, the calculus to figure out, you know, how to attack the monster in like, the tower or whatever?
Yeah.
Pretty much. It was difficult. I remember when I was a teenager, I was like, oh, hell with this. I had a lot of friends that played, but I'm like, no. They were trying to explain this and that. And I'm like, no, I'll watch. I'll just watch.
Hey, Holly, do you remember who has all my D&D stuff?
Who has all your D&D stuff?
Your son.
Oh, that's right.
That's right. That's right.
You're correct.
Yes, you are. I forgot
that's
about that.
Right. I did, too. I was like, I don't know. They're all adults now, so I don't know. Well, Noah's back home, but, you know, he's still an adult, so I don't know. I've got so used. Well, let me tell you, Daniel, now, and Jennifer probably, I don't know if you play, but we use that D&D Beyond, which has really simplified things because it's
helps.
Free. I mean, you can buy a paid version, but we don't. It's free. You go on dndbeyond.com. It'll roll your dice for you. We still like physical dice because, well, they're pretty, you know. They're pretty, you know, and they're cool. So, you know, you still want to roll physical dice. And sometimes the rolls are crap on the D&D Beyond. But it if you roll on there, it does the math for you. It does everything for you. And you don't have to write everything down. You know, I still take notes. And I get inebriated when we play usually, so you can always tell. You can always tell how bad it's been that night because of my writing, and they all laugh about it. They'll say, okay, let's see your writing from last session, and I'll hold up my notebook. And you can tell how bad I've got because, my writing will get illegible, and I'll start drawing symbols and graphic art, and I'll come. But, yeah, it is so much fun. And I do like
so
the whole
great.
D&D Beyond. Because your books and everything are there. You know how it used to be very expensive to play. Now, literally, you can play for free. Free. Everything.
Exactly.
All the books, everything accessible online, everything's there, you know. And we have friends, like you said, you had friends that draw and different things, well, that play, you know. We've got friends that are, you know, that have 3D printers. So they print our characters out for us. They print our D&D, our DM. He actually has a printer, so he prints out, you know, the monsters attacking us, the characters, and he'll print out trees and different things along our path. And, it's really cool because, I mean, there's just – it's limitless, you know, and it is a creative tool to it's like relaxing, but yet it keeps your juices flowing.
Exactly. And it's a lot of fun.
That's how I got into carving, was carving out dragons and knights and different things like that for D&D characters.
Oh, for the game.
For the game.
I'll be darned, I didn't know that.
That's cool.
Carving and painting them up and not doing all that stuff. I used to do lost wax casting.
Daniel, you must carve me a tree someday, a little tree, and I will keep it here on my little night table. Let's see, and I'll have it there. You have to do me a little tree.
That is cool.
Little tree.
Okay, you know, my tree will probably be dead, with a branch sitting out there with a noose and everything with a skeleton on the end of it, don't you?
And
I think
what's
that's
wrong
why she
with
wants
that?
You to carve her a tree.
Remember who you're talking to. What is wrong with that? You know, put a little Raven on there. I'll even be more tickled. There you go.
That was fantastic.
That's what happens. You get a bunch of creatives
tonight.
Together, see? You know, you just
yep.
go, you know, it's never ending. That's always fun.
No, that's the good part. So we're getting near about 5.5 minutes left in the show, and so there's a couple of things that we definitely want to make sure we touch on. One is what are your do you have any appearances coming up? What's your – I know this, you know, the whole COVID thing, I know it's always a mess with live events, but what do you have coming up this year that you might want to talk about?
I am a panelist at Imaginarium this year.
Yes. We're excited
yeah.
about that.
That's pretty much the one live appearance that I know is still happening, unfortunately, because of COVID, like you were saying, they got canceled.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually supposed to, VersaCon isn't going to happen, and I was going to be at a convention in Ohio during Valentine's Day weekend, but it's just too dangerous right now.
Yeah, right. Yeah, unfortunately.
Right.
Waiting on that warm weather.
Yeah.
See, I like the cold, but
I do too.
Yeah.
But boy, with
right.
COVID, that's what's said anymore.
Right.
You know, it's like ruined it for all of us because we can't really huddle together anymore. That's like
right.
we were still playing D&D in person until the last few weeks because, well, our DM got COVID. Another person we play with has COVID. So I'm like, I'm sitting over here with COPD and other health things. And I'm like, no, we're going to reconvene.
No.
And we'll resume in the spring.
Reconvene, yeah.
Yeah, we will reconvene in the spring.
Well, the good news is, Jennifer, that at least Imaginarium's in a pocket of the year where it should be optimal as far as the cycle of, you know, viruses and all that.
We
it
did
should
fine
be
last year.
Exactly.
A good time. Yeah.
Nope.
Last year went very smoothly. No,
no problem.
No problems coming out of that. Nobody reported anything bad. So,
nope.
You know,
and hardly anybody
crossed.
Had a mask on. So, yeah. I
and,
mean,
and I can tell you for sure, unless
sick.
The world has turned over on its head, there won't be any ice storms
mm-hmm.
to worry about in July either.
Right.
So, that's
right.
good.
Hope not.
Yes. We are going forward for sure. But what platforms would you like to promote tonight for people to connect with you and find your material and books and buy them and all that good stuff? Websites, social media. Where should we fans find you?
I have a Facebook page. It is LaunchYourself. It's Facebook.com, LaunchYourself. You can look up the Launch Yourself Chronicles. That gets you to my book page. Excuse me. I post book updates, and I also will have chats where, like, I can, you know, give, like, previews of the books that I'm currently working on. And also I post things like little memes and playlists. I have playlists for my characters, and I share them. I'm also on Twitter under Umbra Elf, and I just got an Instagram page, excuse me, under writer Jen Barnes. So, but Facebook's probably the best way to find me. You can also find me as Jennifer L. Bratcher Barnes if you want to connect with me directly. And you can find my book on Amazon. But if you connect with me on Facebook, message me directly. I will be more than happy to send you a link to get a digital copy in exchange for a free review, or just an honest review on Amazon, Goodreads, wherever you support your indie authors.
Excellent.
Cool.
Excellent. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you the last word to cover anything that we may not have touched on tonight that you wanted to mention, but it's been great having you on the show, and definitely want to have you back in the future. Looking forward to seeing you at Imaginarium, and thank you for joining us. So, yes, Jennifer, and next week, everyone listening, we'll be back at 9 p.m. Eastern with another Star Chamber show with a featured creative guest. So over to you, Jennifer, then Holly and Daniel, you can take us out.
Well, first off, thank you for having me on the show. I would definitely love to be back. maybe around Halloween, do a horror podcast. That'd be a lot of fun.
We could do that.
And like I said, Jennifer, Launch Yourself Chronicles on Facebook. You can like my page, message me, and like I said, I'd be more than happy to send you a link to a free digital copy in exchange for a review. At this point, I just want to build my audience and, you know, get fans and get people excited about the future works.
Excellent. Very good. All right,
Holly. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun.
We will see you in July.
Yes.
See you in July.
A lot of fun. But, yeah, join us next week. We have another great creative you don't want to miss, 9 p.m. Eastern Central Time, and that will be Eastern Standard Time, sorry. And hopefully we'll be thawed out by then from this wonderful winter storm landing. And stay creative. Have a great weekend. Stay warm. Stay safe. And I'll turn it over to the dark one.
And we got to hear about, you know, some new vampires coming on the scene. Hope it doesn't scare you too much to know that you might have them living next door to you. But it's always the possibility. So if you haven't gotten your tickets yet for Imaginarium, I would suggest going ahead and purchasing those because we are going to sell out this year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's tickets, hotels, everything else. So start making your plans and be there because that is probably the only place that you'll get to see me this year because I've got a lot of other things that I'm doing right now. But until we get a chance to talk next week, I'm going to ask you to do yourself a favor and do me a favor and be creative. Daniel Dark signing off.